Welcome to the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, where it's all about slashing your debt, slashing your taxes, and creating a liberated lifestyle. And now, your host, who has a vast collection of vintage DC and Marvel comic books, and ironically lives in Minnesota, where his favorite NBA team, the LA Lakers, originated, Dave Denniston.
Welcome back, my friends, to the latest episode of the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast. And I am honored to have a guest here on with me, with us, who has lots and lots and lots of podcasting experience. He has had over 6 million downloads to his podcast. That's right, 6 million downloads. And he had a career in the financial world. And he has now come to the point where he is enjoying life, he is traveling to different countries, and he is helping people with these financial issues and questions. So please help me welcome David Stein. Welcome, David.
It's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you bet, you bet. Well, David, if you don't mind, just give us a little bit of your background and history. I mentioned that you're really into finance, and that is your background. Where did that love start for you?
It started, well, to be honest, when I went to undergrad in college, somebody that was in the financial industry said you can make $100,000 in finance. And So it wasn't even a love. It was, oh, I could make money at that. I'm in business school. So I became a finance major, and then, you know, learned the different areas and realized that what I love about it is how it captures the whole complexity of the world and how everything is changing within finance. And because my biggest concern in my career is not to be bored. And if I get bored, then it's time to move on. And so there was enough going on that I could do that. And then when it became time to left, I left that field. And when I turned 46, launched my podcast, Money for the Rest of Us, after that, and just because it was a whole new avenue of exploring and to continue to teach about money and how money works, economy works, and personal finance and things like that.
Wow, that's great. And was it something just growing up that was ingrained in you? Was it something that you've just learned this stuff along the way? Or was it just that moment in college that you referred to as like, oh, this sounds pretty good. I'm in business. You know, I can pick up these principles. Tell me about that background.
We grew up very poor. And so single family home, my mom hadn't gone to college. So she was always struggling in business. So I was very attuned to, we were happy, but not having a lot. And so I basically overdosed in self-help books, Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich, Zig Ziglar, and all these things. And, you know, as like 12, I wanted to learn how to make money as an entrepreneur, and I would launch little micro businesses. And so I was just always kind of aware, and it's kind of ironic because that's essentially what I do today. I run a one-person business, So it's a little bigger micro business, but just trying to figure out, and back then, obviously, there wasn't any internet, so I had a P.O. box. I was running newspaper ads to do handwriting analysis or anything I could come up with. Most or all failed, but I just became aware of sort of at a micro level. And then I was sort of looking at just kind of a macro, how does the world work? And so it's that curiosity that ultimately led me to finance.
So it sounds like that some of this was born for you almost out of necessity, in a sense, that the desire to grow and get beyond your circumstance that you grew up with.
I think so. Yeah. I'm attracted to numbers like that, just really trying to connect the dots. How does this whole financial system work and the economy and at the big picture level, and then how does that apply at the individual level? And that's what I continue to be fascinated by, as are economy and our lifestyles evolve. It's just endless fascination.
So you make this big leap and you start your podcast, Money for the Rest of Us. I'd love to hear about that part of the journey. Where did you save up a bunch of money, you know, where you had kind of a cash cushion? Or what was that like, just financially, making that big leap from the working world to not having a paycheck at all?
It was easier than you would – well, in my case, it was easier because I had partners. They bought me out. Mm. So they – you know, we had a firm. They bought me out and were paying me over a seven-year period. So, and I had – and we told our clients I was retiring. And effectively, I didn't necessarily have a plan. I knew I liked to teach about finance and the economy, and so I knew it would have some aspect like that. But I had a pretty long runway to figure it out. So I launched the podcast 2 years after I, quote unquote, retired early, and it was really just seeing an opportunity. I was a guest on somebody's show. We got to talking, and I realized that, you know, at the time, this was 2014, there weren't a lot of personal finance podcasts out there. There was a handful, whereas there was thousands and thousands of personal finance blogs.
Yes, there
and
are.
So I launched it and enjoyed it because it very much was – it had some – I've done a lot of public speaking in the past, and teaching about finance to not-for-profits. And so it was, you know, my format is I don't do guest interviews. It just is simply it's a 20 to 30-minute show sharing stories, sharing analogies, talking about how money works, how the economy works, and things of that sort.
And so it's on your schedule. You decide when you want to record, and – you can do it with you all over the world and the globe. Well, I'd love to know, as you've changed careers in a sense, how do you see other people now in terms of the way that money is handled? Is it all just kind of the same? Has your perspective shifted at all, you know, with this career in podcasting? You know, how has your perception of money and how people treat money changed, if at all, in that time period?
Well, it is certainly much more in tune because I came from a corporate finance background. We ran a business partnership. We grew it. It did very well. And then suddenly I'm on my own and learning a completely different tool set. In terms of, in fact, I talked about this in the episode that I just released, is anything scarce anymore? And how our whole economy has changed, where, you know, what is scarce is trust and attention. Yeah. And what in any type of business nowadays, it's not enough to just blanket a bunch of advertising. You have to earn the trust and you have to earn the attention. And the primary way you do that in today's world is you give away free stuff, free content. You educate, you share with people. And that's a different mindset altogether, not so much with money, but I remember at our old firm, we were hesitant to give things away. Well, if they're not paying for it, why would we give that to them?
Right.
Whereas it's sort of flipped on its head. Now you give a lot away because that's how people notice you, and then share your things with other people and eventually earn their trust, and then they tell you what they're willing to pay for. But it's always a small subset that's willing to pay, and I think that's the other change. You realize how unwilling most people are to part with their money. They're very – because they see it as a limited resource. They don't want to get burned. And so when they buy something, they want to make sure that they don't do something stupid, that they trust the person. So they rely on other people's opinions, reviews, and things of that. And I think that's a change in our economy.
Absolutely. No, I completely relate to that with myself, of course, being a podcaster. I'd like to shift the conversation a little bit, David. I think those are great points as to some of the biggest mistakes that you've seen people make with money, whether they are our podcast listeners. Obviously, this particular show, we focus on physicians, or maybe it's colleagues. You know, tell me a little bit about some of the biggest pitfalls that you've seen happen that people make with money.
I think the biggest pitfall is people, one, if they have an expertise in one domain, then they often think they have an expertise in another domain. So a medical professional spent a lot of years being educated in a particular area, but often can be attracted to something, you know, investing, finance, and aren't quite sure exactly what it is, but feel confident that they do. And one of the things that I believe that no matter what the domain is, we should be able to explain what it is. You know, what is it? I had a client once tell me that if I can't explain what it is to another board member, then we're just not going to pursue it. And the act of explaining what something is humbles us. And there's been academic studies on that because we realize, well, maybe we don't know and we should explore more. And I see people get into financial trouble because they chase, be it returns or something that's attractive because there's a lot of hype about it, but they don't really know what it is, but they still kind of go all in. You saw it in the real estate bubble. You see it in other areas of finance that they chase what has a lot of hype, but don't really understand what it is, and need to be able to explain what it is, because then we recognize what we don't know and what we can't know. And in my mind, that's the biggest mistake people make.
Well, I think
they just get excited about it because it's so exciting,
right?
And they just don't put on the brakes.
Well, I think ironically, I mean, isn't this the flip side of what you were just talking about in terms of how the world has changed, that there's all of this information out there? And on this podcast, of course, I throw lots of information out there too, from some of the things I do with flipping land to buying online businesses to whatever. And so people do get a lot of information to the point of knowing enough to be dangerous. And I think from my perspective, we've become in many ways, you know, kind of a do-it-yourself culture, right? Where you look it up on YouTube, you know, how do you do something with your refrigerator, rather than call someone. And certainly many of us know that we end up breaking the fridge or messing it up the first time that we do something. But in some ways, then you learn from your mistakes and you course correct, assuming that you're passionate about it. Any feedback?
Well, exactly. On those thoughts? Exactly. And I think do-it-yourself is more than appropriate. But I think we have to scale our endeavors so that we do small experiments, right? It's keeping the scale correctly. I mean, if you're working on your refrigerator, you want to capture the upside and protect the downside. And we don't want the downside to be so great that we essentially hurt ourselves financially significantly. And that's where people get into trouble. I mean, they might, whatever, they put significant amount of money into something where they really should be starting smaller so they can make those mistakes. Because you know, finance is about making mistakes. And the people that ultimately end up doing the best are the ones that keep their mistakes small and keep that perspective and keep that scale.
Well, I think that's something that listeners would relate to on this podcast, where I talked about when I was in my late 20s that I made $1 million acquisition that right before the 2008 crisis broke open, August 1st, 2008, which probably set me back a few years from where I would want to be. And I've learned my lesson since, and a lot of the experiments that I've been doing are smaller in nature. So I completely relate to that. I'm not putting $1 million into something. You know, I'm taking little bites at a time. So What about, you know, some of the great things you've seen people do on the opposite side? You know, can you give me some thoughts on successful people that you have seen? What are the habits that you see them have, or the kind of decisions that they make that we haven't already addressed so far?
Well, I think they're consistent. They don't give up. And so maybe they're doing a lot of different experiments, and then they find something that, because it's very hard to predict what's going to work. So you try many different things. And then when something starts to get some momentum, they stick to it. You know, podcasting is an example. So a lot of podcasters, they get excited. They start out, but you know, after whatever, 4 or 5 months, maybe they don't see the traction that they want, and they give up. Whereas, you know, especially
in
today's world,
four or five episodes, most people don't make
it. Or maybe
past
four.
10.
Okay, so they make it past 10, and you just can't do that. You have to, with anything, you have to say before any part of it before you start. It's like, I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna set the routines and the patterns. And it's going to be, you've got to make sure it's something you love. Now, there's nothing wrong with quitting stuff, right?
Right.
But if that's a pattern, but generally speaking, you want to commit and then create that pattern and continue to do it, because it takes, like I said earlier, it takes time to gain that attention, to get that word of mouth, and to gain that trust. And I think that's when I've seen people be successful. They've stuck with it and be willing to adapt over time. But part of it is just sticking to the routine and building those habits and patterns into it, so that you can kind of do, you know, what Seth Godin talks about, make it through the dip. Because there'll be times when, you know, you do get discouraged, et cetera, but you have to enjoy the process, the craft of what you decide to do. Because at times it will get boring and it will seem frustrating. But you have to enjoy doing the actual thing and not worry so much about what the outcome is.
Well, let's take a moment for a quick commercial break. Well, my friends, if you are sitting here confused by all these tax changes, wondering how the heck does this impact me? I mentioned in January, the beginning of this year, that I am going to make available to you my calculator showing all the different scenarios laid out on how this whole thing works. So for this month and the next one, if you text all one word, less taxes, LESSTAXES, all one word, less taxes, to 44222, you can grab that calculator right now. Go ahead and text less taxes, all one word, LESSTAXES, to 44222. And if you're interested in wanting to get the tax reduction prescription, the newest version of it, definitely text there as well, because that will give you early access to the next version of the tax reduction prescription. Again, text less taxes, all one word, LESSTAXES, to 44222. And now, back to the show.
That's a hard one. That's a hard one.
Well, it is. Yeah. I've seen it in my business life. I've seen it now that it comes down. It's like writing a book, right? One doesn't, and I've written, like I wrote a novel just to practice learning to write. But not when I was doing it. When I was doing it, I had visions of being, you know, somebody picking me up, getting an agent, making millions, being one of the few that get successful. But at the end of the day, I found I actually enjoyed the writing process, editing the smallest element, the sentence, the word. I mean, I enjoy that and continue to enjoy that. And I didn't even try, and I eventually gave up. I mean, I finished the novel, and I decided, you know, it wasn't that good. So I'm not even going to self-publish it. But it taught me to write because I enjoyed the process, and then I could apply that to, you know, I'm writing a book now within the finance realm, and it's because I enjoy the process, and I'm not so tied to the outcome.
Great advice. Great advice. Well, the other thing about you that I think is fascinating of something that I aspire to do is to travel more in my life. Certainly in our family, we're working on being completely debt-free, which is a principle that I feel is really important of many super successful people, that they get to be debt-free or at least have minimal amount of debt relative to their net worth. Tell me about the lifestyle that you have now. Now that you're podcasting, I understand that you're traveling quite a bit.
I am, but let me share just a couple things on the debt side, because I get this question a lot from listeners that they leave school, they might have huge amount of student loan debt.
Yes.
And I agree eventually being debt-free is appropriate. But oftentimes, there's different types of debt. There's debt that, you know, consumer debt, that was spent on something that basically depreciates over time, be it a car, be it a vacation, right? I mean, going into debt vacation makes absolutely no sense at all. But there's other types of debt, which is really an investment in our human capital. I mean, the medical profession. I mean, you go and you take out student loans for your medical degree. Your net worth didn't go down. Your financial net worth might have gone down, but your overall net worth actually increased because you increased your earning power. You increased your human capital. And so sometimes we get fixated on our financial balance sheet and think we're, you know, have a negative net worth, but don't realize that sometimes you take on debt to build your human capital, your earning power over time, and ultimately are more wealthy and then work to get that paid off. But in terms of travel, you know, when I quit, you know, one of the reasons my prior firm was so we could travel even more as a family overseas. So we spent several months traveling in Asia, Japan, Korea, Europe, and just, you know, as somebody that is endlessly curious, I just love to watch other people and watch how you just realize how big the world is and generally how good people are everywhere and giving. And it's fun to just simply observe and immerse yourself in a culture. And it's like, hey, you show up. My son and I went to Cuba for that tiny window when it was open for Americans to go legally a year or so ago. And it's like anything. You show up and you're completely overwhelmed. You have no idea what's going on. You know, after a week, you figure it out. And that's part of that. It's sort of that being immersed in a culture and figuring out what the patterns are, relating to the people. You know, there are a lot of parallels between traveling and business or finance. It's just figuring things out and having that interaction with people, which I love.
So what sort of financial lessons have you learned in your travels, whether it's maybe some sort of travel hacking strategy or just the culture and how other cultures look at money? What are some of the big lessons that we can all learn from you on that?
Well, I mean, you realize that we're very much the same, and that, you know, people all over the world, they struggle with the same issues with money that we do, in terms of figuring out their budgets, in terms of what they should spend money on. I find that oftentimes countries where there's more poverty, that people are more willing to give on a day-to-day level, buy you something to drink, buy you food, even though they have very little. And that's always very sobering. I think, you know, the way that we like to travel is very much slow travel. So my wife, LaPearl, and I, we're about to leave next week for maybe it'll be 2, maybe it'll be 3 months through the southern United States. And that's how we did Europe. You have to be flexible when you travel. You just can't. I mean, it depends on what you like. I mean, some people if want the security of going through, you know, a package type travel experience. That's, you know, we don't like that. We want the flexibility. So we try to build as much flexibility as we can into our travel. And so we'll only plan out, you know, a week ahead And, you know, we kind of know we want to go somewhere in the Southeast, but, you know, at this point we're planned out a week or so ahead. So using Airbnb, which we've used extensively, sometimes we'll use hotel points, but sometimes we'll actually pay for a hotel. What we haven't done is buy an RV, because we went through the numbers and realized we're only going to be gone 3 months. We will have spent more in the depreciation on an RV than we'll pay staying at Airbnbs and hotels.
Well, what an interesting segue, I think, in terms of one of the things that I find to be an issue for many of us. One of the main causes of divorce can be money, and that we see a lot of friends, family, that it divides and conquers. As you transitioned to this new life over the last few years, it sounds like it's been a wonderful time for you and your wife. What was that like in having conversations with her about what you're going to do and the next step and getting her on board with the decision?
She was encouraging me to quit. She was ready for me to do it. Now, it was a little easier for us because I live in Idaho. I had telecommuted for 10 years. So my partners were all back in Ohio. So she was already used to being at home. So it wasn't like suddenly I'm at home every day. I remember my in-laws, when my father-in-law retired, right? Suddenly he was home all the time. And the vacuum cleaner annoyed the heck out of them. And so they hadn't built up that rapport of him being home. In my case, we were already there. So my kids were used to me being home. And so that was an easier transition. And she has a lot of wanderlust and so wanted to travel. And so this gave us the opportunity. I think a bigger transition in my case, and I think a lot of early retirees, is when, even though I quit and I knew my partners were going to pay me out, psychologically, you know, there wasn't any more income. I had our investment portfolio. I had this payout, but I was 46. And this idea that, you know, 40 years to be retired.
Yeah.
And in that you can't think in 40-year time frames. You have to take it year by year. And so, I mean, that's what I ended up doing. I'm going to launch a podcast and figure out a way to make money. And I think most early retirees, I think most need to have some type of lifestyle business. I've met too many retirees that even in their 60s or 70s, they're bored. And you need something to keep you energized. And in my case, and I think in most cases, there's some aspect of lifestyle business, because it's essentially a form of creativity. I mean, there's only so many people that can paint and draw and write. For most of us, we've engaged.
I'm not one of those painters.
Right. We've engaged in commerce our entire life in some aspect of it. And so figuring out the game of business at some level, obviously providing a service, interacting with clients or customers, either online or in person, there's satisfaction in that because you're getting service. At the same time, there's some monetary reward and just trying to figure out all these people. That's why I think business is so fascinating from that aspect, that, you know, other hobbies, I mean, you can take your hobby and turn it into a business, but most people, their hobbies aren't enough to sustain them for 20 or 30 years in retirement. You get tired or bored.
Well, we're getting towards the end of our conversation together. And I think there's some great lessons that we've been learning from you today, David. Any final thoughts that you want to leave with us?
I think the key, I mean, I know your audience are a lot of medical professionals. I have, you know, some of my listeners, you know, a lot of my listeners are also in that same field. And, you know, I've done episodes on Live Like You're Already Retired, in this, the idea of lifestyle business. And some of the feedback I got from those in the medical profession is some love their job. They love to work. They like what they're doing. And that's perfectly fine. And they should continue to do that. And so it's only, know, this idea that we have to achieve this retirement goal because somehow life's going to be different. My philosophy is find a way to live now, be it your day job or some type of lifestyle business that you can sustain for decades, because that way you'll stay engaged, you won't get bored, you'll continue to grow your financial net worth, but also your overall human capital as you add to your skill sets over time.
Well, and physicians have some wonderful opportunities, whether they're crazy like me and want to start different kinds of businesses, or if they just want to do locums or something where they can contract out. So I think there's so many options today. I have a friend who does expert witnessing, and he loves it, making fantastic money doing those kinds of things.
Right.
So I think there's so many opportunities, and there's so many great tax deductions that we've talked about on this show for having your own business. You may actually have more money in your pocket depending upon how much you're working and what that looks like. Well, David, let's wrap it up now for today. Tell us, where can people find Money for the Rest of Us and you and your information and all those kinds of things?
Yeah, the podcast is available wherever you get your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher. My website is moneyfortherestofus.com, and that's where you can learn more about me and the work that I do and the podcast, and right there, moneyfortherestofus.com.
Perfect. Well, thank you again for being with us, David. And my friends, if you are a physician, you're someone else servicing physicians, want to tell your story, I'd love to have you on the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast. Make sure to contact me, Dave, at drfreedompodcast.com, or on my website, www.drfreedompodcast.com. For the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, this is Dave Denniston. Thank you again so much for joining us. Please rate and review the podcast on iTunes or wherever you get this podcast. I would really appreciate it. And remember, my friends, remember to slash your debt, slash your taxes, so you too can live a liberated lifestyle.
Well, there was the show. Hope you loved it. And of course, we want to make sure to remember that right now is the time. If you are confused about this tax stuff, you want the latest copy of the tax reduction prescription and that calculator I was talking about in January, there's no better time to grab that than right now. Text LESS TAXES, LESSTAXES, to 44222. Again, that's all one word, LESS TAXES, LESSTAXES. Thank you again so much for listening. Blessings to you. Have a good one.